Good morning, everyone, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are turning towards life as usual on a Sunday morning, UK time. And as usual, we're completely delighted to be here with you. And we are on our 301st episode, Justin, is that right? 301. And we have an amazing source by Justin this morning. And maybe you are new here. We found that we had a few more subscriptions on YouTube last week. And so it looks like maybe a flurry of new people have joined us. And so just to say the pattern of what happens here is that we bring something, we bring a source. And each week it alternates between me, Lizzie, and Justin as to who chooses the source, which could be a poem, a reading, something we've written ourselves, anything that is language, basically. And then we bring it in the space between us and we talk about it. And we often go off on wonderful tangents that sometimes are very close to the source and sometimes are very far flung from it. But always we start with the source, something to awaken our wonderings and curiosity. And then we find our way together and respond to one another's feelings, thoughts, and wonderings and curiosities. So that's the shape of things. And if you are new as well, just to say you're so welcome to comment or to email us. You can email us at hello@turningtowards.life, and both Justin and I will receive your message, and we love to get those messages and to respond and to say hello and to meet you. And you can find us on all of the normal podcast platforms like Spotify and Apple Podcast, and we're on here live on Facebook every Sunday morning UK time. You could also find us on YouTube, and you can also go to the very wonderful website that we have called turningtowards.life if you want to look at everything, every conversation we've had in this series of episodes, of 300 plus episodes of us finding sources and talking to one another and finding our way together. So there's lots of ways to listen to us and lots of ways to gather with us. So thank you, Justin, for being here as always.
Oh, such a great joy, Lizzie. It's just delighting, and all the new people who have joined us, welcome to all of you. And also delighting in all of the people who've stayed with us all this time. And I suppose, Lizzie, I also always want to give a mention to Third Space, from whom all of this is born, and say to all of you who are with us, if you find yourself interested in the kind of conversation that we're in, then Third Space, which gave birth to this, is a wonderful place to go and look to see what we're up to there. We are thirdspace.org. And now, here we are with the source for this week. So, Lizzie, I've been sitting on this for a long time. I've been wondering about it because there's a sort of a pattern that we've been in for a long time with Turning Towards Life, about, in a way, about the kind of length and depth of the sources that we bring. And I'd been wondering about it, and I was feeling very joyful and playful, and also greatly appreciative of how much these three lines have to say and bring us. And it became clear to me as we entered the beginning of our fourth century that it was time to bring something as concentrated as this. And it's a poem called Burdenstone, and it's by Victoria Chang, from the book The Trees Witness Everything. And it goes like this. There is a bird and stone in your body. I think that should read, there is a bird and a stone in your body. Your job is not to kill the bird with the stone. I'm going to read it one more time. There is a bird and a stone in your body. Your job is not to kill the bird with the stone.
Bird and stone. There is a bird and a stone in your body. Your job is not to kill the bird with the stone. There is a bird and a stone in your body. Your job is not to kill the bird with the stone.
So I absolutely love this complete gem of a poem, Lizzie. because it seems to me, at least for me, to speak right into the heart of the experience of being a person. I really know this about myself. I woke up this morning, as I often do, filled with very strong feelings of many different kinds. And the ones that I'm used to waking up with and have done for a long time, and I've spoken about with you and I've spoken about here on Turning Swords Life, is I often wake up with strong feelings of fear. And these days I've also been waking up with strong feelings of grief. And I got myself up and made a cup of tea and made some porridge and sat and had some breakfast. And then I took myself off to the pond where I swim every day. And I got into the water, and as I went around in the water, as I do every day and as happens every day, I could feel everything inside me reconfiguring. And instead of only being able to feel the fear and the grief, which I had been in some ways taken over by, I can start to feel other things inside me start to open up and start to arise. And I can start to feel alongside them love and joy and gratitude and appreciation and settledness and truthfulness and courage, and then lots and lots of different thoughts. And in amidst all of that complexity, and it always feels to me these days like I have lots and lots and lots of different parts. I could talk about a bird and a stone and a tree and an angel and a king and a queen and a baby and a house and a mountain and a lake and everything that's in me. This bird stone way of talking seems to get right into the heart of it, because to me, birds and stones are both beautiful and necessary, but they don't necessarily get on well with one another. It depends upon how they're turned, how they're pointed, and what they're pointed towards. So a bird can sit on a stone, and a bird can carry a stone, but a stone, when hurled or dropped, can hurt a bird or kill a bird. And Victoria Chang's poem starts to open up in me this deep, I suppose, call to a kind of inner attentiveness, to really paying attention to what is here inside me, and to start, for me, to start here with me, which is the place that I know most intimately, and to start to see that there are many different kinds of beauty, and that they are not always they're not always habitually oriented in a way that most helps each to flourish. It really can be that some parts of me dominate and trample over and are terrified of other parts of me. So the way I read this is, not only is there a bird and a stone, and there are some questions to ask about how to relate to the bird and the stone and how to help them be in relationship with one another, but there's also something else, which in Victoria Chang's poem is the one that she addresses as you. There's a bird and a stone, and your job, oh, there's a me here too, is not to kill the bird with the stone, which is so easy to do. I have a kind of responsibility here, and a way of caring, and a way of noticing. So the last thing to say is, when I read Victoria Chang's words, what happens in me is I get reminded very quickly that whatever dynamic is going on inside me, and however strong it is, particularly if it's a one that's very painful or somehow seems to be smothering or hurting or in some way working against the goodness of the whole and each of the parts of me, there's something I can do about it. I actually have a job here. I'm not just a passive observer. So for me, going to the pond or talking to you and having this conversation on a Sunday morning are both ways, not only of not killing the bird with the stone, but they're the ways of freeing both the bird and the stone to be exactly the ones that they are.
It's really lovely hearing you, Justin. And seeing how I can find your way of processing in myself as well. I'm really appreciating this distinction you're making between different kinds of parts of ourselves and how some can, and creating the relationship between them. And that there's not only the parts that exist, but there's me, there's myself that is the parent, if you like, to the parts, that has a responsibility to the parts to arrange them or something, or to create dialogue between them, or to help them be in the kind of relationship that enables them to flourish. I'm really appreciating the language that you're bringing to that. And when I read this, my first response is, I've got no idea what this thing is saying. I don't know. How am I going to talk about this in Telling Towards Life? I've got no idea what this is. And then I sat with it, as I always do. If I don't understand, I just stay. And what emerged for me in my system, as in the way that the poem, Victoria's poem, worked on me in some way, is to make the distinction between the textures and the characteristics of a bird and a stone inside of me, and what I could find. And the stone, and like you, Justin, you know, I've fallen in love with stones. So it's not like I think stones are bad and birds are good or something. And I've also been in my life, you know, when I lived in India, I remember there were some really, really, really quite traumatizing blackbirds who used to just stay in this tree outside our house and wouldn't move. But there's also these beautiful, delicate birds that I've encountered. So the word bird has a lot in it for me as well. But the first response was that there's kind of a delicacy and there's a flight in a bird that feels majestic and something to be safeguarded, because it's not gross like a stone. So there's a distinction immediately in me about the delicacy of a bird and the hardness of a stone. And when I relate that to my inner life, I know that there are some very hard stones in me, like my black and whiteness, like my this or thatness, the way I polarize, like it's this or it's that, or it's I'm wrong or I'm right, or you're wrong or you're right, which feels stone-like to me in my relationship to the word stone. And then there's the subtleties of my birdness, which might be my kind of the nuanced sense I have about creativity, or the sacredness of writing a song, or the beauty of changing a nappy, like those things that feel less gross, less obvious, less weighty or something. When I bring my stony parts to those birdie parts, it can be really easy for those parts to be destroyed and or belittled or crushed or swiped away really quickly or hurt or vanished from my awareness or devalued or something. So the way I've been sitting with this is to notice when the harsh parts of me get hold of the subtle creative parts of me, and how destructive and smallening and tightening that can be as an experience for me. So then when you say about, I don't know what the word is, arranging those parts of harshness and subtlety in a different way, paying attention to them in a different way, not letting the harsh parts smother the subtle parts, but really being with the harsh parts so that they don't have to feel like they have to smother the subtle parts. So really talking to my rightness and my wrongness, and understanding what kind of fear is the underlying cause of them or the underlying dynamic in them, and bringing myself to them with kindness and respect and listening, maybe they don't have to act out so much, and maybe they don't have to smother the parts of me that feel like they bring the majestic, sacred mystery to life that feels so important to me. So I'm really appreciating this way that this poem has had its way with me, to kind of make it really clear that there is quite a stark distinction between the subtle, majestic parts of me, or the essences of me, and then the more, like, I'm picturing a big pair of clumpy shoes stamping all over everything that feel real and righteous and strong, that they need to be addressed in quite a different way in order that the other parts don't get smothered.
Really appreciating this way, Lizzie, you're bringing of talking about that which is subtle and majestic in us, and then that which is hardened in a way in its certainty or its rightness. And as you were talking, I could feel in me the cynical parts of me that would dismiss the bird as flighty or unnecessary or a distraction or something, and how easy that is to happen, and indeed how many times I think the very childlike aspects of me that have been with me all my life got trampled on by the stones of others and then my own stones for their impracticality or their unrealness or something. You know, the part of me that would go out and stand outside and marvel at the sky or pause to see the beauty of trees or take some time to write a poem or something. And of course there are lots of seems to me there's so many more ways of talking about this subtlety and majesty of the bird that you're talking about. They're just the ones that I'm talking about. So maybe it's not surprising also that in a world that can be very, very difficult, life can be very hard sometimes, that it's very tempting, maybe, and for many people life is very hard all the time, and it can be very tempting to kill the bird with the stone, either because life is hard so we ought to get our stoniness out, or as a kind of protection, Lizzie, like I might try to protect you by being the one who encourages you to kill the bird, because the stone will be practical and the bird will be a problem. And there's something very deeply protective and well-intentioned in the move, both inside and outside, when we do that to ourselves and we do that to one another. But it comes at such a huge cost, because it's the cost of protection. It's protection by destroying or sidelining aspects of ourselves that we humans really both are blessed with and really need in order to flourish. We need our delicacy and our majesty and our subtlety and our mystery and all of that. And I suppose that's why this poem is this way around, that Victoria Chang is not first inviting us to wonder about how we don't kill the stone with the bird. It tends to go the other way around. But I also really appreciate that we need the stone. And I'm just reaching behind me because I have this stone on my shelf behind. It's really heavy, and it's a piece of hornblende schist from the Cornish coast. And I did a bit of research on it, and it's 252 million years old or thereabouts.
Wow.
So like many stones, it comes from long before we were around, long before there were humans, and long before there were birds. And there's something here about, it seems to be, it would be a mistake to try and as a way of trying to preserve the delicate, subtle, majestic bird in us, to try and exile all the stoniness in us. Because there's also something about that which works to try to keep us safe, and that which works to try to keep our feet on the ground, and that in us which pays attention to practical things that need dealing with. And it's so easy to split ourselves apart in a stone-like way, even as we come to the way that you were talking about stones, bird and stone. We can go bird good, stone bad. I really ought to cultivate the birdiness in me and ignore the stoniness in me. But to not kill the bird with the stone must mean something like really giving a place for the goodness that the bird in us expresses and holds, and a place for the goodness that the stone in us holds. So the bird can stand on the stone, for example. And to not get into a bird good, stone bad, bird right, stone wrong. Like that's the step that many of us make. I've certainly made it lots of times when I've got freed up from something. Oh, here's some kind of new freedom or discovery in me. And then I can make it into another version of, I can just make it into another version of bird and stone. I'll beat something else up inside because I've just discovered something new that was liberating, and I'll judge other people by my new standards because I suddenly got so enlightened, or, you know, whatever it was. So there's a call here to a kind of, both a kind of radical inclusion and also a kind of gentleness with ourselves inside, a sort of realizing that maybe the bird and the stone aren't actually fixed things, that anything in us and anything in other people could be either bird or stone, depending upon how we treat it, how we come at it, and how we hold it. And that birds and stones can also become other things if we'll let them.
Mm. Yeah, I'm receiving, as you're saying, from you and your words, that like there's a lot of distance between a bird sitting on a stone and then me killing the bird with the stone. Like there's a lot that can happen in between those two extremes. And so it's not like when I see a stone, I have to throw it at a bird and kill it. That's not what has to happen. It's not the nature of, it's not the way things go or something. It just happens to be that probably many of us have seen in some way people throwing stones at birds in our lives or something. There seems to be some relationship implicit there or something. And I'm appreciating the, so it feels to me like, Justin, there's a kind of, I don't know, some kind of spiral here of acknowledging our birdiness and the more subtle parts of us, which basically in our culture we're not really very good at in a wide way. We're much better at acknowledging our efficiency and our straightforwardness and our practicality, and like that's the dominant way that we look at things. And so recovering our sense of birdiness feels important in the context of the kind of wider cultural expectations and definitions of what a successful human is and everything. But then coming around the cycle again, it feels really important to acknowledge all the ways in which our efficiency has care at the heart of it, or our straightforwardness has truth at the heart of it. So there's a way of all of these distortions that have become kind of culturally dominant and also live inside of us as dynamics, and, you know, our forcefulness might be part of being wholehearted, or our righteousness might be part of feeling courageous. You know, there's essentialness in everything, and also distortion in everything. So our birdiness might be really sacred, but it also might be distorted in all kinds of ways. Like maybe the delicacy with which I feel things can also get out of whack somehow. So my feelings can become the thing that dominates an entire atmosphere, rather than me having my feelings earnestly and genuinely and processing them well and coming cleanly into a situation or something. There's a way everything has its light and everything has its darkness. And so this beautiful kind of dance I'm seeing between the birdiness and the stoniness feels really important to acknowledge that there's light and dark in everything, and there's distortion and grace inside everything. And wherever you look for a distortion, you'll always find grace. And whenever there's grace, maybe there's also a distortion to it, some way that hampers us or stops us or sabotages us or leaves us feeling less able or leaves our relationships feeling impoverished or something. So I'm really appreciating your invitation to feel into where we might have preferences, and then to look at our preferences and be really clean and clear with ourselves about the fact that not one thing is better than the other, because goodness resides in every distortion and there's shadow to all the light. It feels like you're describing a way of relating to our inner worlds and other people as a way of being, I don't know what the word is, but like with equanimity or something, where you're willing to see it all rather than have your preferences shape the way that you receive and see the world all the time, but to step in a different way where you acknowledge that, you know, putting a polarity on a stone and a bird is very different than standing back and seeing the goodness in the bird and the goodness in the stone and the difficulty in the bird and the difficulty in the stone and receiving life that way.
So we're coming to the end of our time, Lizzie. I'm also left from what you're saying struck that one of the real possibilities here is also to see that everything inside us is in relationship to everything else, and that there are ways that nothing is just happening on its own. Even when I feel filled with stone, it's in relationship to all the other parts of me, the birdiness and the... And when we start to see that everything's in relationship all the time, we also maybe can begin to bring ourselves to those relationships, which is the same as the relationships between people as well, which is that no relationship is a fixed something. It's always amenable to change if we'll bring our attention to it in the right way. So I could have lived for a very long time unwittingly in a dynamic where I'm killing the bird in me with a stone. And even by beginning to notice that, there's the possibility that that might change as I bring myself generously to that. Thank you, as always, Lizzie, for diving deep into this and for sitting with the sources that I bring, where you go, I have no idea what this is about, and for staying in and then look at the conversation that happens. It's such a joy. And thank you to all of you who are with us. We're very glad that you're here. And all being well, we will be back at the same time next week.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.